Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. It is raining, kind of a wet day today. How are you, Dr. Mixon?
Tall, brilliant, incredibly handsome, and delusional as always.
I never argue with the doctor. Absolutely right. Not. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. I'm Lynette. Dr. Umat has the weekend off.
She does indeed.
Just the two of us here.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear that song
a little later.
Okay. And, of course, we welcome you to the show. If you've got questions for the doctor, you have learned that if you wait until the end of the show, sometimes we don't get to you. So we would love to give you that phone number right now, 206-421-5757, so you can get your questions answered today. 206-421-5757. Talk about a diagnosis, perhaps, maybe some symptoms, or just aging in general, and why is this happening to me?
Because you're a human.
Because you're a human, that is correct. That is correct. So, Dr. Mixon, so what's on the top of mind today?
Top of mind
yes.
today?
Yes. What are some of the things that we should be discussing? I mean, you've been reading the medical journals and reading all about the lies we've been told. All those things we, you know, 6 feet apart, make sure you do this, yeah. Wash all of the surfaces 20 times a day.
Know, some of the things that in our recent pandemic past, that some of my colleagues were unhappy that I was talking about, because I was telling you the things that we now know are true.
So, yes. You know,
that this COVID is an RNA virus. No RNA vaccine provides more than about 6 months of protection. And so the idea that we were going to take a vaccine and we were going to be safe for the rest of our life, that was political foolishness. It had basis in science.
And if you get the vaccine, you won't get COVID.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, your risk of getting COVID goes down for about 5 to 6 months. You know, but then the vaccine wears off. RNA viruses, we just don't make long-lasting immunity to. That's why you have to get a flu shot periodically. You know, the influenza is an RNA virus, and influenza viruses, we take our flu shot, we're protected for about 5 or 6 months. That's why we take it when we do. We take it at the beginning of the flu season, so that about the time the flu season is ending, our protection ends too. Okay, but you don't get a flu shot once in your life, and now you're protected forever. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
Wrong kind of virus. And, you know, they were originally thinking, and nobody knew any different, that this was droplet transmitted.
Right,
and
yes.
And that's where the 6 feet came from, actually. They thought that when you coughed, you were spraying out droplets that would fall to the ground by gravity. Mm-hmm. But if you were 6 feet away, the odds on you getting enough droplets in your face to catch the virus would be extremely low. The downside, of course, of that theory was also it meant that you could get the droplets on surfaces, you'd pick things up and you get it on your hands, and then you'd touch your eyes, nose, and you'd get the COVID.
Yeah.
We learned, though, within the first 6 months that it was not droplet caused or droplet transmitted, that it was, in fact, aerosolized, and that it went up into the atmosphere. And the problem was not how close you were to people. It was how long you were indoors. Your chances of catching the disease outside was almost non-existent. So there's no need to wear masks outside. There was no need to stay 6 feet apart outside, especially if you have any breeze at all, because the number of viral particles you could breathe out or breathe in would be extremely low. And so all this thing about, you know, watching our president walk on the beach alone with his dog wearing a mask.
Was the dog wearing a mask?
No, he wasn't. But it was just stupidity. The fact is that it didn't matter whether you were sitting or standing in your restaurant. You know, the fact is you had to wear your mask while you were waiting for a table. But then you could walk to the table and sit down. The virus wouldn't get you anymore.
That's right.
That never made any sense at all anyway. But what did, turns out, is that the virus circulated in the HVAC system, the heating and cooling system, and it was circulated through the air. So what made it risky was the longer you were in the restaurant.
Oh.
So longer you were indoors, with or without a mask. And the only masks that did any good at all were KN95 masks that were properly fitted and changed a couple of times a day. And none of the paper masks did any good at all.
People were wearing every day over and over and over again. Yeah.
Which, of course, I wore one that said, "Let's go, Brandon."
Yeah, and I remember that.
Because, it was just dumb. I wore it as a virtue signal. I had to wear it.
You had to wear it.
Because I fly a lot, and I couldn't get through the airports without one. But I found that when I wore my "Let's go, Brandon" mask, security waved me right through.
Right through.
So they didn't like it anymore than I did.
There you go. Mine all matched my outfits, but I know they weren't effective, but no. They looked cute. I mean, if I had to wear them.
Fashion accessories, nothing to do with health.
Sparkles.
Yeah, so, you know, we're now the CDC and NIH and so on are admitting that, well, yeah, it probably did come out of the Wuhan lab. Yeah, all right, maybe calling it the Wuhan virus or the China virus was not as racist as we thought it was.
It's factual.
You know, yeah. And, all that garbage we put you through was unnecessary. Oh, yeah, and children never did need to be vaccinated or wear masks because the risk of a child dying from COVID was 0.0003%.
Wow. They probably had a better chance of dying from something else.
They had a better chance of getting hit by a car crossing the street to the school bus than they did of dying of COVID. Yes.
Wow.
Just pathetic. Anyway, so we stunted millions of children's education for years.
Yes.
Many of which will never catch up.
No.
You know, it's really sad. Oh, well.
And a lot of those businesses that had to close that will never be able to come back.
Yeah,
and lost their businesses.
We bankrupted an enormous number of people, and it was totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay, so that's what some of the things are that you've read.
That's what we're reading now.
Yeah, you're getting the information.
It's a whole lot of, oops, we were wrong. Please don't get mad at us.
Yeah. There you go. And what are your thoughts on taking, you know, if you're getting ready to go somewhere, should you have that COVID booster, COVID vaccine, or have we all gotten past that now?
Once more, you do get protection for a few months.
Okay.
You know? You lose 50% of your protection in the first 4 to 5 months.
Okay.
So if you are getting cancer chemotherapy or radiation therapy, or you are immune suppressed for some reason, and you're going to be in tight quarters with other people, then yeah, you probably ought to go get your vaccine. But for 99%+ of the human race, no.
If you're going to be driving in your car by yourself
with
your mask.
And if you're 85, 90 years old and you've got a suppressed immune system, you're diabetic, you're morbidly obese, for goodness sakes, yes, protect yourself.
You're a candidate, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, for the rest of us, no. Worthless.
All right. Okay. Anything else right now that we need to get a vaccine for as we're headed into summer? Or is it pretty much just the fall when we're looking at the flu vaccines?
We're in a lot more danger from sunburn right now than anything else. You know, I mean, unless you're traveling down in the tropics, I mean, you want to be careful with Zika and some of the mosquito-borne diseases. You know, you're heading for the Amazon or for Africa. You know, make sure that you're protected against your malaria.
Malaria, yeah.
Yeah, you know. hydroxychloroquine works very nicely for malaria as a prophylactic.
Mm-hmm. They usually have you taking that before your trips, if you're going somewhere, and then afterward.
Yeah, whenever I was in Asia, whenever I was a young soldier, we all took hydroxychloroquine all the time because we were eaten up by mosquitoes all the time.
Oh, I bet.
You know?
Oof. Wonder what it did to the mosquitoes biting
know.
You. We don't know.
Nope. And I don't really give a damn.
We don't care. So. No, mosquitoes were. All right. Here's the number to get through today. We would love to talk with you, take your calls, and find out more about your health and aging. That's what the show is all about, focusing on getting you stronger and faster, leaner, smarter, sexier. And what was that, Dr. Mixon?
Happier.
Leading Edge Medicine is here. And this is the number. It's 206-421-5757. Of course, we are live in the studio. We're live in the studio, which will be a video studio here in very soon.
Another 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we're just actually what I'm waiting for right now is to get the set built.
Okay. We got our carpet, though. That's nice. You'll hear a little less echo.
The walls
echo.
Are painted. Mm-hmm. The carpet is in. Yeah. And we got all the 8 cameras and the lights and the soundboards and all that stuff is ready.
All the toys.
Yeah, we just don't have anywhere for us to sit on camera.
sit and stand. We'll be able to do that, too.
Yes, we shall.
Yes, that'll be good. All right, taking your calls. We'd love to talk with you if you've tried to get through before and couldn't. Now is the time to call at the beginning of our show. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon, and here's the number to call. Let's talk about your health, your aging at 1-206-421-5757. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Stay right there.
Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
Yes. And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon. He is the lone doctor, in this big, soon-to-be beautiful studio. We've got the paint. We've got the trim back on, the carpets.
Prettier than it was last week.
Oh, yeah. Every week it's fun to see what's going on in our new studio. Pretty soon you'll be able to not only hear us as you're streaming, you'll be able to see us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to take all 4 hours of Saturday to start with. We'll be video streamed. Mm-hmm. So you can watch us live as well as hear us, but then we'll cache that. You can go back and see any part of it anytime for some period for the future, mm-hmm. or if your friends wanted to see it, you can show it to them. But then we're going to take that 4 hours. We're going to cut it up into 5 or 6 little 10 or 15 minute segments of the most interesting calls.
That's good, yes.
And then those we'll put one on every day. And there it's gonna go on essentially every social media outlet.
That'll be good, yes.
Around. So that we can develop a bigger audience. Mm-hmm. With this show we do about 13,000 people on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to build that up to hundreds of thousands. And so we have to have a wider audience than broadcast radio.
There you go.
So we will keep our broadcast radio, but then we're going to
branch out
into audio, video, electronic distribution worldwide.
Okay. Very good. That means I won't be able to come in with a wet ponytail soon.
You can.
I guess I can, right?
Yeah, we just say, look at the chick with the wet ponytail.
There you go. Oh, let's take some calls. And if you'd like to get into the call queue, here's the number. It's 206-421-5757. We have Jeff on the line. Good morning, Jeff. Welcome.
Hello, Jeffrey.
Jeff and Alala. I use your 4-hour program as my template for walking, so I'm on my third hour here.
Very good.
If I could get an overview of your on intermittent fasting, and then just caloric reduction to where you only eat once a day. Just your kind of overview opinion of that.
Okay. Ooh, it sounds like you got some wind out there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's windy.
Yeah, I know. I had the problem. I was talking with a friend this morning when I was on my walk, and the wind in my earbuds kind of made it hard for us to communicate. All right, let's talk a little bit about how our ancestors actually did eat. You know, our ancestors were not so much intermittent fasters. They were intermittent eaters. If you look at your fingernails, that pathetic thing we use in exchange for claws, my kitty cat's got bigger, more dangerous claws than I do. Okay? And, you know, our fangs are pretty pathetic. Look at your fangs compared to a dog or a cat's fangs. We are not very imposing creatures of tooth or claw. And so our ancestors mostly ate what couldn't get away, couldn't outrun us. So we ate a lot of vegetables, a lot of leaves and grass and fruits, and whatever animals we could catch. But there's not a lot of those, you know. Turtle soup was probably one of our biggies in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
But we are designed in our genome to eat everything we can whenever it's available, because that's what happened with our ancestors. They ate a lot in the summer and fall when there was a lot around to eat and we didn't have to work too hard for it. And so our ancestors would get as fat as possible during the summer and fall. And if they went into winter when food was going to be very short supply, if they went into winter skinny, they died.
Yeah.
And they didn't survive to have babies the next year. So generation after generation of the fattest people surviving through the winter to have babies the next year. And we selected ourselves. The chubbies inherited the earth is what really happened. And we still have that genome. Our genetic code tells us whenever there's really rich, high-calorie food available, eat it. And eat as much of it as you can get. Because winter is coming, and if you're not fat, you're going to die. And so that's what we do. That's what we're made to do. So getting overweight and being fat is not a failure of character. What you're doing is you're listening to what your genetic code is screaming at you to do. When we tell people to eat less than their body craves, we are actually asking you to do an inherently unnatural act. Mm. All right. Here's the problem. What was a survival trait for our ancestors is killing us now.
Yeah.
Because now we have unlimited supply of high-calorie, high-fat, nutrient-dense foods available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, you know? And so if we do what our genetics are telling us to do, we're going to get fat, demented, diabetic, heart attacks, cancer, osteoporosis, all those things that cripple and kill us are coming from our inborn metabolism and our prosperity.
Ah.
Okay. Now, you want to see how much your genome controls this. Every affluent society in human history, go back and look at the statues and the paintings of ancient Rome and ancient Greece. Thousands of years ago, long before processed foods, long before grocery stores, women were round, middle-aged women. Young women are slender, and as they got older, they got thicker. That's not a new phenomena. It's been going on.
For a long time.
For thousands of years. Okay, men, when they were young and working hard, were fit and muscular, and as they got older and their hormone levels declined, they got stocky and flabby-bellied. So, you know, people blame this on, well, our food supply has changed, our food's not as nutritious, you come up with all kinds of excuses. No, this has been present for all of human history. It's not a new phenomenon. I eat as sparingly as I reasonably can. You want to know about my intermittent fasting? Okay. I have a big, robust breakfast. My wife is kind of the traditional wife. I get up in the morning, I shave, I drop down, I knock out 60 to 70 push-ups, I do my squats, I go out, she has me a nice, robust breakfast. This morning I had pancakes and eggs and cappuccino, and then I go out on the trail and I do about 3 miles most mornings before I go to work. And then during the day at work, I can focus and concentrate on medical journal articles for about an hour at a time. And after about an hour, my brain starts going fuzzy. And so I either drop down behind my couch and I do some sit-ups, and then I go back and I focus again. And another hour, my brain is getting fuzzy. So I grab the dumbbells off my windowsill and I do curls and overhead presses for a bit. And then I sit down and I study some more. And another hour, I find myself getting foggy headed. So I'll drop down and I knock out another 60 or so push-ups. Okay. And so in the course of a day, about every hour, I do 2 or 3 minutes of vigorous exercise.
You're moving. You're moving.
But I push my body to failure. I do as many sit-ups as I can. I do as many curls and overhead presses as I can. I do as many push-ups as I can in each of those 2-3 minute segments. But I do them one every hour. So in the course of the average day, I'll knock out 200 to 300 push-ups, and, you know, and a few hundred sit-ups and stuff. And so I maintain my muscle mass even though I have a sedentary job. And then and then I have a nice big lunch. I don't be sparse at lunch. I eat what I want to eat at lunch, but then I don't eat again till the next breakfast. So I don't normally do dinner. I go home in the evening. My wife and I hold hands. We take an evening walk. We spend about an hour walking together every evening, knock out a few more miles. That is my daily routine. It's not very fancy. I don't need spandex. I don't need a gym membership.
Yeah. You didn't mention when you have your coffee break with your donuts,
well,
Dr. Mixon.
I don't usually do the donuts.
No, you don't.
But I do. I get one cup of black coffee first thing in the morning, and then when she puts my breakfast on the table, I eat that, and then she brings me a cappuccino, and then I go do my morning exercise. And every evening, I sit down, I open up, I look at the medical literature that I missed during the day, and she brings me another cappuccino. So I have, that is my evening excuse for a meal.
Okay.
Is a chocolate evening cappuccino.
Ooh. Ooh. Hey, Jeff, hang on. We're going to talk more about this and intermittent fasting and what it does for you, why it's good, and believe it or not, you can do it too. Yeah,
it's not that hard.
No. It's not that hard. Stay on the line. And if you've got a question for Dr. Mixon, get in the call queue. 206-421-5757 is the number to call. That's 1-206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
You know, for a longevity clinic, staying alive is an appropriate song.
is very much. We want you.
Staying alive.
To stay alive.
Not only do I want you alive, I want you to live while you're here.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not after just existence.
No, no.
I want active living.
Yes.
Do the things that you want to do. Get out there and live your life.
Mm-hmm. There you go. We want you stronger, faster.
Leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Absolutely.
And the last one flows from those others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a specific diet that I eat.
For intermittent fasting? You had pancakes this morning.
I don't have those every morning. Usually I have an omelet, so I do some eggs and veggies and some meat every morning. But I eat what I crave. I eat what I want most of the time. I just have to limit how much of it I eat, which is why I normally only eat two meals a day. I eat dinner, though, when I go out for business dinners. You know, if I've got people who fly in from Chicago or New York to talk to me, I take them out to dinner.
There you go.
Those days, I try to eat a very sparse lunch, you know, and I may well have a salad at dinner or something. But, it's less what I eat than how much I eat. And it's a matter of trying to stay as physically active as my inherently sedentary doctor's lifestyle permits. I mean, I spend my day sitting in an office. And so in order to stay strong and lean, I need to be active intermittently throughout the day. And of course, my wife gives me a strong incentive. She is a gorgeous creature, 30 years my junior, who, if she's got three fat cells on her body, they've never met.
I don't think I've seen those.
I don't think I've seen them. And she likes having a lean, hard body in her bed, and I enjoy being the lean, hard body in her bed.
And you're good with that, yes.
And so, she's got this little incentive for me that fortunately doesn't have to play out very often because I always remember it. And that is, if I get out of the shower and she sees anything sagging on my belly that shouldn't be there, she waves one finger in the air. She reaches out, taps me on the tummy, and says sweetly, "Fat."
Uh-oh.
Now, she's a Chinese chick, and, I know that this is one of those very subtle Chinese hints, but as Caucasian males go, I'm pretty perceptive. So I recognize the fact that when she taps me on the tummy and says, "Fat," there's probably something she wants me to do.
Okay.
And that is lose that last 2 pounds that I just gained because I got sloppy.
Uh-oh.
it's not a formal sort of program. It's stay physically active, do 5 or 6 miles a day on the trail, do lots of push-ups and sit-ups and curls and overhead presses, and don't eat too damn much.
There you go. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen you go through a drive-through or grab the burger and the fries and
I do occasionally.
Every once in a while.
I probably will, for instance, when our 12-year-old daughter is going to Korea with her school class for a couple of weeks.
Fun.
And my wife and I are going to take a little, grown-up-only road trip. And we're just going to be driving down the road. We have no special agenda. We don't know where we're going to stop yet.
A true road trip.
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll start looking for a hotel. And we'll just stop and we'll eat wherever we happen to be. And it won't all be healthy, wonderful food. There'll probably be some burgers and some fast food along the way. But, that's a 4 or 5 day trip once or twice a year.
Yes, that's not an every day.
No. The goal of Longevity Medical Clinic and of my life is to lead a robust, joy-filled, active, productive life, not to make yourself so miserable that you're praying for an early death.
Yes.
Don't let your fasting, don't let your diet, don't let your activity program destroy your life. It's there to enhance your life. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you, Jeff?
Yeah. At the same time, can I ask you this? Do you believe that we're moving toward a system where you're going to get a health score to get your course of treatment for whatever may ail you?
Yeah. I think we should, to some extent. If I were king of America, or at least in charge of the healthcare system of America, I would make your health insurance premium dependent on your percentage of body fat.
Mm.
Everybody would go in once a year to your doctor and you'd get your body fat measured. And that would determine your insurance premium. Because we know statistically that being overweight sets you up for cancer, heart attacks, dementia, strokes, osteoarthritis, osteopenia, cancers of almost every type. Being overweight is killing us as a nation. And right now we're telling people that's okay. Get as fat as you want, get as unhealthy as you want, and we won't penalize you in any way for it because somehow that's considered to be bad. But you know, human beings follow the money. And if everybody knew that every pound they put on excess was going to cost them extra money every month, they'd have an incentive to do something. So a lean country would cut our medical care costs in America by at least 50%. If all we did was become lean as a nation, our medical expenses would drop by at least 50%, probably two-thirds.
Wow.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, thank you.
All right.
And I'll keep listening and walking until your end of your program.
All right. Thank
Take
you, Jeff.
Care, Jeff. Bye-bye. Have fun.
Okay, God bless. Bye.
All right. Intermittent fasting. Check it out if you haven't done it. And, you know, once you try it, you're like, oh, I can't skip a meal. Try it.
Well, but do it the way that I kind of worked into it by accident. Start off by don't eat after 7 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
No evening snacks.
Okay.
And then move your evening meal down to 6 o'clock. Then after a month or so, move it to 5 o'clock. And then 4 o'clock. You know? And you'll find that these things stretch. And you don't have to. My pattern is I eat breakfast and lunch. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm going to be physically active in the morning and I'm going to be working all day. I've got a job and I have to be focused and alert. So I need my calories in the morning and in the afternoon. So I eat breakfast and lunch. You know, I don't have to focus in the evening. My evenings are made of love and pleasure. You know, I play with my daughter. I give her her lessons. We take a walk. I cuddle my wife. We stream a film. I read stuff I want to read. My evenings are relaxation and pleasure and love with my wife. And so I can afford to be a little calorie short then.
Mm-hmm.
But I need my brain functioning at peak during the day. And so I eat breakfast and lunch. If you want to do lunch and dinner and skip breakfast, fine with me.
There you go.
You know, I don't care. It depends on what your lifestyle is.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I think once you try it, you'll realize, wow, that wasn't so hard. I've been doing this with you for a while, not as long as you, but for several months. And I find that it's actually harder for me to eat dinner or to join somebody. So I try to do what you do. And it's like, okay, a little lighter on the lunch and then we can do dinner.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean big, giant dinner. That just means, you know, you're doing dinner.
Yeah, you're eating to live, not living to eat.
Yes. Yes. All right. We are going to take a break here in just a moment, but let's go ahead and at least get our question from Rich from Spokane on the line. Hi, Rich. Welcome.
Hello, Rich. How can we help?
Hello. Thank you. I didn't discuss. One thing I do want to, Dr. Mixon, you are the model for your business, I have to say. I'm in the healthcare business, and I deal with people in all ages, but when they get up into your age, it barely could make it into my chair. So listening to what that you do is exemplary. So I applaud you for that.
Yep, he does practice what he preaches.
Yes. One of the things I was going to say in relationship to that last call until I get to my question, because it kind of segues into that, is that the introduction of what I think is damaging to our health, these seed oils, we have an overabundance of polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory.
And absolutely true.
Back in the 70s or 80s, when with the introduction of high fructose corn syrup, mm-hmm. I just remember you look back at ads or whatever from the 70s and the 60s, you see people they're not like they are now.
No,
they're not like they are now. So definitely the food chain has been denigrated.
Yes, along with our lifestyle, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, hang on to your thought. The music says we got to take a break, but we'll be back. And
absolutely.
We'll chat with you a little more.
That's right. It's all Mrs. Brady's fault in the 70s for...
Is that what it was?
You know, making us try Wesson. with a fried chicken. Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll be back with
more. My grandma did it with lard.
Yes, ooh, that from the can that was on the stove.
Yep,
yep,
right.
There you go. Leading Edge Medicine will continue in just a moment. Get into the call queue by calling 206-421-5757. We'll be back to talk with Rich in just a moment, and Cheryl and Mary, too. Stay right there. All right, pretty soon you'll be able to see Dr. Jerry Nixon.
That's right.
Boot scooting.
I'll have to bring in my boots and my Stetson sometime. And,
that's right. Yeah. We might have to have a little area just for
that's
that.
That's right. We have to
in between
arrange,
the breaks.
Move some of those cameras over to a corner so that we can actually do a little, line dancing.
Add that to the list of what we need right next to the Lynette's.
That's
requests.
Right. I got all carpet in here. Mm-hmm. We don't have any polished hardwood for.
Okay, I might just need to be a little temporary place. Okay, Rich, let's talk here on Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Mixon.
Catch us up, Rich. Mm-hmm. So, what's going on next? What is it you would like some help with?
Well, it segues into what I because one of the statements you made kind of surprised me, and I'm not certain of the motivation, but. I was talking about inflammation, and then you were talking about these boosters, these COVID boosters, and of course you know better than me, maybe that they use the messenger RNA technology.
Sure.
And so knowing after doing a lot of study about the pharmacokinetics of these things, I don't see how they can be advocated by anybody, and I know that. Doctors in general, if they say anything about it, they got the Washington Medical Commission breathing down their neck. So, you know, but the thing is that you inject these things, you inject the 30 to 40 trillion lipid nanoparticles, and you create this polysystemic inflammation because every organ system in your body is creating that spike protein, and your immune system is reacting to that. And you being a doctor know better than I do. That everybody's different, so everybody's going to react different. But there's going to be a lot of people that don't react well to this of that inflammation. And just from a anecdotal friend, relative standpoint, acquaintances of the people that have died from strokes, heart attacks, and cancers, that after having these things, at least I'm putting that as the cause. And so the people that you advocated that for, the older people, they would be the least person that I'd want to see take one of these messenger RNA vaccines. If they're concerned about catching it, I would just boost my N-acetylcysteine because your body produces high amounts of I can't think of it. But that's my point. So I'm just wondering –
Well, let's talk about that for just a little bit.
Why would somebody advocate this? Plus, one other thing, just real quickly, and I'll go.
You don't have to go.
Moderna is making these factories all over the world. They're going to start using this technology for all of their injections.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's not new, right, Dr. Mixon?
It's not all that new, but it's fast, it's efficient. Mm-hmm. There are drawbacks to the particular vaccine to this virus. And, I mean, he's right in the fact that the spike protein is a pro-inflammatory. It probably is the cause that we are getting increased risk of cardiovascular events, sudden death events, especially in young males.
Yes.
There seems to be more young males than females, interestingly. I think this particular vaccine was rushed into production way before, in retrospect, we wish it was. But let me cut a little slack to the people involved, too, though, okay? When COVID first came out, we didn't know a whole lot about it.
Right.
And it was a SARS-like virus. which was its real name. SARS-like COVID-19, because it came out in 2019. And SARS had a 90%+ fatality rate. So it killed almost everybody that caught it. And so we saw this similar virus show up. And so the Royal College in London was doing computer projections, and they came out and they said, guys, we think this virus is going to be a really nasty one. It's going to kill hundreds of millions of people if we don't do something about it. And so they scared the bejabbers out of every politician on the planet, mm-hmm. because, you know, you're running a country, and suddenly the people at the Royal College are telling you, yeah, we got this virus coming in. You're going to have dead people filling your streets.
Yes, that's what they were told.
That's what they were told. Now, if I was a politician and somebody told me that, I'd kind of panic. All right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mr. Trump was in charge at the time. And so that's what he was told. That's what Burke and Fauci came and told him. You know, they said, we've got this thing. It's going to come. People are going to be dying all over the place, and we have to do something about it. You know, Trump took what he was told, and he said, wow, okay, let's fix it.
Yes.
And he said, we have to save hundreds of millions of lives, so we are going to make a vaccine. We're going to have this kind of moonshot. You know, This is the project, like bringing the atomic bomb to fruition overnight. And he got rid of all the bureaucracy. He got rid of all the stopgaps. But in the process, he also got rid of the testing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he brought a vaccine that would normally take 5 years or more to be brought to fruition. He brought it out in 8 months.
Yes.
I mean, mind-boggling way to cut through the red tape and the bureaucracy. That was the good news. Now we've been told we're going to have all these millions and hundreds of millions of people dying in the streets, and now in 8 months we got a vaccine. Wow! Problem with that. You didn't spend 5 years of testing. Okay. So we don't know the long-term effects. We brought it into being overnight because the really smart folks told us that we had to do something.
The people we trusted.
We did something. Yeah. So, you know, you got to recognize that the intentions were good. And mm-hmm. yes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Good intentions. Yep.
But that's what happened. And so, yes, we got a vaccine that only now are we really seeing all the downsides and the adverse effects. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that the technology that we used to make that vaccine was necessarily bad for all time, for all vaccines. It says for this vaccine, we didn't do the proper testing. We didn't take the time, but we didn't think we had the time. So we did what we thought we had to do at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, in retrospect, we say, oops, boy, did we screw up.
Yes.
On the other hand, the technology does allow us to make vaccines much faster and much more efficiently, and to alter the vaccines based as the viruses alter much more quickly than we ever could in the past. The hope is that the technology will now be used with more judicious testing, and that we won't be in a situation where we're running like mad, you know, in a worldwide panic like we did back in 2019. Okay. The downsides of the virus are the downsides, whether it's with the vaccine or the infection, by the way. The same bad things that the vaccine does to us, the virus does too. That protein spike, be it an RNA virus, is incorporated into our genome very efficiently. And it's most efficient at killing us old folk. I am convinced that I was one of the first people in America to catch COVID because my wife and daughter were in China in late 2019, and they were doing a TV show there. Well, I'll get back to that when we come back. We've only got less than a minute, but I'll pick it up when we come back right after this break.
Yes, stay right there. And Jeff, Rich, you stay right there. Cheryl and Mary, we're going to get to your questions as well. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And here's the number to get through with your questions. It's 206-421-5757. Again, that's 206-421-5757 for Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back with hour number two in just a moment. Stay right there.